1 year ago, Simcha Rotman, the religious Zionist member of Knesset, serving as the chair of the Constitutional Justice and Law Committee, was a household name in Israel and in many countries around the world. There was widespread concern, both in Israel and abroad, with the civil unrest that accompanied a major judicial reform package that was championed by Rotman in conjunction with Minister of Justice Yariv Levin. I had wanted to interview Simcha Rotman for a long time. I foolishly passed up an opportunity to do so right before Election 5, which was in October 2022. And boy, did I ever regret that. As a lawyer and liberal Democrat, I believe strongly these reforms not only went too far, too quickly, but also that the manner in which they were undertaken, even if I agreed with some of the substance, was all wrong for a liberal democracy. There is so much to be said for building consensus, even if it takes longer than the government would like. Rotman and I get into this at the end of the interview, but we have nowhere near enough time, and I will absolutely take him up on his generous offer to return and resume the discussion. The matter of judicial and legal reform is not going away, and when it does make it back to the top of the legislative agenda, we can expect that Simcha Rotman will play a central role in Reform 2.0. We begin our discussion today by talking about October 7th, his story. Rotman discusses his role as a senior member of government and the October 7th crisis in the months since. Prisons, the rights of prisoners, identification of bodies, defense systems in kibbutzim and towns throughout Israel, and how things went so horribly wrong. His committee is very preoccupied these days with how to deal with terrorists legally, pointing out that we often look to criminal law as an appropriate guideline, whereas terrorists, in his view, require special laws and remedies. When I founded State of Tel Aviv almost 2 years ago, I aspired to present diverse perspectives and opinion. A significant aspect of achieving that is speaking with politicians and others with a range of views. Simcha Rotman was open, candid, and invited discussion on any topic. In fact, we talked way too much before turning on the mics. But he said his door is open to continue the discussion at any time, and I intend to take him up on it. Yes, the work his committee is doing today is of huge importance. But I also want to go back in time and really get into the detail of his proposed judicial reform and the way in which it was handled. Because, as I already said, the issues are not going away, even if we are distracted for the time being. So stay tuned for more in the future. In the meantime, I expect you will find Rotman's comments smart and direct. I sure did. A final note. This interview was conducted in Simcha Rotman's Knesset office just over a month ago. The delay in dropping this podcast was caused by, well, let's say a technical issue with the recording, which basically means that I pressed a wrong button at some point. And it took extraordinary talent and effort on the part of my genius editor, Amir White, to make the sound decent, even more than decent. Thanks again to Simcha Rotman and, of course, Amir. I'm Vivian Berkovich, former Canadian ambassador to Israel, and now living in the magnificent state of Tel Aviv. Stay with us. Simcha Rotman, chair of the Constitutional Law and Justice Committee of the Knesset. Thank you so much for making time to speak to the state of Tel Aviv today.
Thank you very much for having me, Vivian, and I hope we'll make it interesting.
Oh, with you and me? There's no question. Let's dive in. There's a lot to talk about. I want to start, though, with what we all begin with these days, which is the day that never ends, October 7th. Where were you?
I was at home, of course, Simchat Torah, everyone dancing and celebrating. We did not have, in the place that I live in Mekedem, we didn't have any sirens going on because it's out of the usual places that Hamas shoots rockets to. But during the day, slowly we got more and more information. Me personally, because I have a security detail because of the threats I got during the reforms and still even after. So I learned from my security people what's going on.
So you knew then quite early in the day?
Quite early. Whatever was published, not a lot was known during the first hours. It was a lot of uncertainty about the situation. It was less once it started to roll. I wasn't so surprised. I was surprised at the timing, but not on the scenario, because this scenario was talked a lot in my house before.
When you say the scenario, you mean of a Hamas attack?
Hamas attack, hostages taking over of communities in the surrounding of Gaza. And my wife works in Memory.
Where?
Memory, Middle East Media Research Institution. So we know a lot about what they are talking about in their media, you didn't need to have a very intimate knowledge of what's going on in Gaza. You just had to watch social media. You just had to watch regular daytime television of Hamas and even the Palestinian Authority to expect this kind of attack.
For listeners who are not familiar with MEMRI, that stands for Middle East Media Research Institute, I urge you to check out their website. They have been doing extraordinary work for many years now, monitoring more than 100 Arab and Muslim media outlets the world over and translating important clips into English and other languages. They work with all open source information and material, as Simcha Rotman said earlier. There is nothing secret or protected. Governments know, the United Nations knows, everyone knows, and yet the world never reacts. Even today, the incitement to destroy Israel and murder Jews the world over is widely disseminated, and there is little concern registered. Now, back to our conversation.
I was actually in Toronto at the end of my long annual summer break, and I was supposed to be flying back on October 11th. And so I was at my brother's house when he woke me up early that morning. And to this day, from that first moment, I remain in shock. And I think many, if not all Israelis do, as much as we may have expected attacks or attempted attacks. I think that the real shock was the complete failure of the IDF.
That, of course, was and still is troubling, but it's not something that's easy to say. But when you live where I live, and when you have what I saw on Shomer Chomot, on Lod, when I came there, and I saw the fact that things that you could expect and foresee were not by the police, by the security forces, and they couldn't deal with it when it started. It took the police to take over Lod 4 or 5 days. And
you're talking about May 2021,
right? May 2021. So since then, I am less surprised.
I have to interrupt here to be certain that we're all on the same page. M.K. Rotman refers here to the very extreme and violent riots that erupted throughout Israel in what are referred to as mixed Jewish-Arab cities and towns, most notably Akko, Lod, Bat Yam, and Jaffa, which is part of the municipality of Tel Aviv. These riots occurred during the Hamas attacks on Israel in May 2021.
When you see the abilities of our security forces and you understand that it's not an issue of the firepower, it's not an issue of manpower, it's an issue of the mindset. And when your mindset does not, you tell yourself time and again that you're not calling what you see the real name, terror, and you try to deal with criminal procedures, people calling for genocide, and you say it depends on context. For a lot of people in the U.S., the hearing for the Ivy League universities gave them some shock also, if you ask
Having
me.
Having said that, but I mean that, I think we've diverted a little. What happened that morning was, of course, about the savagery and barbarism of Hamas, but we're also talking about total failure of all of our national security systems. And this is just a fact. We have the fence that's going to stop everything, including tsunamis. That border fence was magic. It was going to stop everything. Everything on it malfunctioned. We had lines of defense at the border. We had kibbutz defense groups that were meant to protect the civilians. We had army bases. Everything failed.
I don't know if you saw, you heard how many times you said defense in your sentence. 4 or 5 times.
Okay.
No offense. No, the defense line will always be breached. Always. Doesn't matter. If you are investing everything you have in defense, that's what will happen. If you don't take the offensive, when you see this kind of monstrosities, and they planned it, and they said it, and you say, oh, no, okay, so we will add more rockets for Iron Dome, and we will add more fans, and you did not do what any normal country would do, is to attack the people. Defense will always fail. You cannot build your entire security of the state, of the country, on defense. You cannot. And that's what we did. And that's what we still, to some aspect, do. And we have to get rid of it.
All of our defenses failed. That is spectacular. It is at the intelligence level. And we both know, and many of our listeners know, the stories of the Southern Command saying to the scouts, ah, forget it, it's Hamas, they're punks.
That's
they can't
exactly
do it.
The point.
I mean, the IDF let down the citizens of Israel. And that's what people talk about, being candid.
It's not a question that there was a failure. It's not a question. I do think that what the IDF did after the first shock would suppose to get into the history books of military with taking over, basically, I think, about 3,000 commando warriors by Hamas that were destroyed in a very short period of time by soldiers that came from all around, were caught by surprise, and took over a huge piece of land from the Hamas back. And of course, the outcomes are terrible. They could have been way worse. They were planned to be way worse. And the fast response, the first responders, will it be the Kitot Konenut of some of the communities? And will it be the special forces that came down rushing? And the volunteers that came down saved Israel from huge... You can't even imagine the scope of the disaster that was on our gates. And we need to learn the lesson. And I think that the main lesson that we should learn is that if you're on the defense, you will always lose. Always.
Are you concerned with what is going on in Israel? This is not just another crisis. State of Tel Aviv is committed to delivering superb and candid analysis, and we're offering a limited-time subscription special, a 33% discount from the regular fee of $90 annually. 1 year for only $60. Stay informed and stay connected with State of Tel Aviv. We are a reader-supported enterprise. If you value our work, please subscribe. It makes a huge difference. stateoftelaviv.com. All one word. Now, back to the podcast.
So let's go back to that dreadful October 7th. You learn a few hours in from your security people, and more as the day goes on, you start to learn the scope, because none of us really understood it for several days. You are a senior member of the government, and the government was awfully quiet. Prime Minister Netanyahu came out that night, Kiryat, made a very stone-faced, we're under attack, we're at war. Some kind of declaration to that effect. But the government was quiet for the first few days. What was going on? What was the government?
So when you say government, the executive was a big part. The executive was in shock. And it took the government, different parts of the government, the executive, to operate in their scope, some more, some faster, some slower. When we talk about the Knesset, the legislator, immediately on the first day, we opened a group of all the Knesset members that were involved, more than 100 Knesset members. We divided ourselves to groups on certain issues. I was involved mainly with Kitot Konenut all around the state of Israel and with the identifying of deceased, murdered people. And on those two issues that I was involved, I can tell you again, that the government were caught in a very bad situation, but within an amazing amount of time got into action. Within 2 weeks, I think we had about 900 kitot konenut came from nothing, that were not existing in many places, equipment with weapons and defense all around Israel. And that saved, I think, many people, because without this, the uprise that might have come from Judea and Samaria or from within Israel might come. That was one aspect that I saw. We could talk about other aspects, but I was involved in those two issues that I know. And also with the identifying of the missing persons and identifying the bodies. I was almost every day in the army base that all the bodies came there. I was there, and even on Shabbat, I had to come a few times and help identify in some and create the connections that will make the identification faster. But again, it was a facility that was built for 30 casualties a day. You cannot compare it to anything that happened anywhere else in the world. And in most countries that suffered something that even similar to this kind of event, many bodies were never identified, were never found. Here, all the systems worked in humane pace so fast. Again, it was not, and I had to experience it many times by myself. No, if you talk about days or hours to a family that's looking for a relative, it doesn't matter. They, of course, will be in a situation that no one can judge or understand what they're going through. But within days, more than 1,000 people were identified and were brought.
Well, I want to talk to you about the issue of terrorists in prison in Israel. I understand that our prisons, special prisons, have been built to accommodate the Nakba forces, and there were others, not all the Hamas fighters were from the elite Nakba forces. I don't know how many we have now. What are we at? 1,600? 2,000?
The number is classified.
So we have these new prisons that have been set up to accommodate these individuals. I saw a short film on the news the other day, and the gentleman who is in charge of running this prison says, we adhere to the minimal, as we've been instructed by the government, we adhere to the minimal international standards for these prisoners. That's something that I guess is a combination of your responsibility and Minister Ben-Gvir's?
No, it's Minister Ben-Gvir's responsibility. Okay. I, as the chair of the Constitution Committee, can go to every prison and see what's happening there. And I went and I saw with my own eyes as part of the oversight role that I have. But I think that the minimum is a little bit more than what they should get. But of course, shouldn't get under the minimum. But of course, I think that no one, I don't see anyone object to giving them only the minimum.
I want to move on because we do have limited time and there's some important issues I want to get to with you. One is the issue of an inquiry, which I assume if there was to be an inquiry with respect to what happened and did not happen on October 7th and thereafter, that would fall to your committee in some way.
The inquiry of what happened in the army, of course, it's not my committee. And probably will have some kind of something that will be decided in the government on a special inquiry. But I think that the issues that will be in my committee is, of course, the legal aspects of how do we treat terror and terror incitement. I deal with it in my committee all the time. And I think that it's a challenge for the entire free world.
So tell me, how is your committee dealing with these issues?
One issue is the incitement to terror, which involves, of course, in Israel, many people raise the issue of free speech. I think that's wrong frame of looking at issues like this. I do understand when you have issues of free speech violations, incitement, regular incitement, or any other criticism of governments that can go into incitement or other issues that involve free speech. I think when we're talking about terror, it's not an issue of free speech. I think in terror, we need to make sure that people are not going on the borderlines expression of terror. If it's terror, run away from it. A terrorist is an enemy of the state. It's not, people can do treason by speech. It existed. People were trialed on that. During the war against the Nazis, people were trialed and actually executed when all they have done was speak.
In the context of Israel today, what does that mean?
It means that we need to be very strict about incitement to terror. And I'm doing a lot of hearings in the committee about that. I think we need to make sure that terror is defined in the right way and trialed in special tribunals, not in the regular court system, because we are contaminating the criminal procedure by looking at terror the same way. Suddenly, a law comes to my committee and they tell me, you shouldn't let them meet with lawyers. I don't want in criminal procedure a guy who's not meeting the lawyers. That's not what I want. In terror, by all means, I don't care about that because he's an enemy of the state. He's fighting against me. The same way about extension of the periods of arrests, all those issues. We need to have this separation, and I'm calling for it in many issues. We succeeded in some issues. We will do it in more. And the trial of the Nukba terrorists by themselves, most of it has been done in a secret subcommittee because of its very sensitive issues, also concerning the hostages, also concerning other issues. So we're not having those debates in the open just because of the dangers and also the information. As I told you, the number is classified than others. So we're having this in the secret committee, but the committee members, by the way, left and right, together, on a consensus, on the same page, understand that there need to be special tools. We cannot treat it in the same way.
Is there any particular country or jurisdiction that you look to as an example that is dealing with this issue in a democracy, how to handle terrorists in the justice system? Or is that yet another one where Israel gets to be the first out of the gate?
On the issue of terror, Israel always was on the first adopters of mechanisms to deal with terror, because there is no other country that faced anything similar to that. Some people compare it to 9/11. 9/11 was compared to the events of October 7th, percentage-wise, and it was something away. And basically, we had October 7th-like events in the past, not one day, but we had 2 years with 1,000 casualties from terror. Just make the comparison what it means in other countries. It will be tens of thousands of people casualties of terror. But I think that the best comparisons we need to look at is actually learning from rules of war, Nuremberg trials, tribunals that came in after war in Kosovo or other places. That's the place to take into idea how the free world treated this kind of atrocities.
The clock was running, and we were out of time. At this point in the interview, Rotman was overdue for his next meeting, but we squeezed in a few minutes to discuss the important issue of judicial reform.
In our final few minutes, I can't speak with the member of Knesset Simcha Rotman without touching on the judicial reform, which since October 7th, of course, I think it's fair to call it a non-issue, certainly a sleeper issue. But it's an issue that for the year prior took up pretty much all of your time and then some. And I know,
and not only mine,
it was a very difficult year for you personally, I'm sure, professionally, and for the country. You look back now, I assume and expect that you still think that the principles and reforms that you were pushing for have strong merit.
Of course. And you know what? I think even there is a lot of confusion between the reform and a reform, because many people talk about the reform. The reform is an issue that deals with certain aspects of the justice system, not even in the most urgent order, that the government decide, the executive has decided what we are dealing with first and what after. So that's the reform. And I believe the reform will have to change. I think a reform is a consensus in Israel. The fact that the Supreme Court and the Attorney General and the entire system in Israel needs to have a reform, a deep reform in the separation of powers that does not exist in Israel, and in the checks and balances, again, that does not exist in Israel, that we need to adopt, and many flaws of that needs to be addressed. There is a wide consensus in Israel that we should do it. Last year for me was very strange, because what we actually done is took a lot of reforms that were supported by key players in the opposition and offered them, and they would not even negotiate. They would not even talk. I spent so much time in negotiation, in behind closed doors, in the president residency, and the people were honest enough. They said, I agree. What you're offering is making a lot of sense. I would agree to that, but they will kill me on the street, so bye. And that's for me was amazing.
At some point, I'd love, you know, when you and I both have the time to sit down and hear more about that, because that version of events didn't actually make it out into the public.
It was part of the issue.
Having said that, I was one of those people who was not supportive of the reforms.
No one's perfect.
There were certain aspects of it. I agree with you that we need it. I totally agree with you when you point out the checks and balances issue. The way in which it was handled, though, caused significant division in society. So you're right. Okay, I'm hearing you say, listen, Viv, I tried, and they said, hey, we agree, but if I say this publicly, I'm going to get flopped in the streets, so I got to go with my people. And I think that both sides can come up with stories like that. But at the end of the day, it's not about attributing blame. I want to ask the question from 30,000 feet. Do you think that all of that kind of acrimony in society in some way was a factor in October 7th happening?
I don't know. I don't know if I definitely think that the threats on the army came from some people who said, don't go to the army, when there will be a war or attack on Iran, we won't come. I think it given our enemies, I think, the wrong impression, and it created a problem. But I don't blame October 7th on that, because I think that those plans, as I said, those plans by the Hamas existed way before. And so I think that gave some wrong impression, but the attack would happen apparently anyway. I know that the first version last year was planned on Pesach when the reform was at a break. We were in the president residency, so it wasn't pushing forward as much. And they planned to do it on Leila Seder, on Passover, and they planned to do it in 2015, in 2013, in 2012, in 2014. And so I don't think it's connected. I do think that we need to make sure that this kind of division in Israeli society will never happen again, because it will give the wrong impression to our enemies, and we shouldn't give this impression, even if it's a false impression, to our enemies. We shouldn't encourage them. It definitely gave them a good encouragement on the weaknesses of the Israeli society. We must learn, and it's true for both sides, we must learn to have the political debates in a way that will not destroy Israel. And that, I think, last year was a very bad example. I don't think it came just because of the reform. I think when you have five elections in 3 years and people are not willing to sit with each other, and some people, in my point of view, that might upset some people, but I don't care because I believe it's the truth. Some people were willing to sit in government with people that they themselves called terror supporters, just not to sit with the other side in the political game. I think it was terrible. And it happened before the judicial reform. It happened in the last government. It happened 2 years ago and 3 years ago. So we must learn the lesson that we must be united because our enemies don't differentiate between us.
Simcha Rotman, thank you so much for your time. I could sit here and go for hours, but apparently you have to be somewhere else. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. For those of you wishing to comment, please do so on our site. I am a staunch believer in open discourse, particularly in the political environment. And I look forward to continuing the discussion with Simcha Rotman. For those of us who are committed to bridging gaps and ensuring the civic, economic, and political health and longevity of Israel, there is no other way. We have huge chasms in our society, and we have to deal with it. The alternative is way worse. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the State of Tel Aviv and Beyond podcast. We'll keep the dispatches coming as frequently as we can. If you like what you're hearing, please take a moment, rate us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. You can check out our full library of articles and podcasts at our website, stateoftelaviv.com. State of Tel Aviv is an independent media venture, and we rely on subscribers to support our work. If you are not yet a paying subscriber, please consider taking the plunge today. Each person really does make a huge difference, especially in these very challenging times in Israel. It is important that you stay informed and current and seek out a range of perspectives. This is a pivotal moment in Israeli history. It is not a time to be passive and disengaged. Thanks for sticking with me to the end. I'm Vivian Berkovich, signing off from deep inside the State of Tel Aviv.